Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast, where we discuss strategies to grow and make money online. Today, what we're going to do is we're going to discuss the best online business models and the pros and cons of each. And Tony, between both of us, we've probably done almost every type of online business, or I shouldn't say business, but different ways to make money online, wouldn't you say?
I think we've done them all.
We have. I don't know where you want to start with this. I was thinking, like, since we both run e-commerce stores, maybe we start with e-commerce. Of all the things that you've done, what do you like about e-commerce and what don't you like about e-commerce?
It's funny because I would not have started with e-commerce in this talk only because I think it's probably the hardest way to make money online. And you might disagree because you actually have a course teaching people how to make money through e-commerce. But I think if you're just getting started to build a business, e-commerce has so many different hoops that you have to jump through in regards to sourcing products, you know, building a website or figuring out Amazon. There's a lot of components there that complicate it. However, I think there's probably the most monetary potential if you can build a really successful brand. So I think it's got a pretty huge upside if you can build a really successful brand. But I think to get started, and it probably costs the most money to get started.
That's definitely true. Okay, so let's take a step back then. Which model do you want to start with? I guess assuming from like the most beginner level to, I guess, if you have the most money to invest in a business, where would you want to start?
Okay, so I think if you are just getting started online and you're trying to build the audience, build a business online, to me, I think the easiest way to make money off the bat is to sell a service.
Okay.
I don't think you agree either.
For me, like, you know me, and I guess services to me just seem like such a drag, right? You have to go out and get a client, and then you have to cater that client. Like, whatever they want to do, you have to cater them. And then at the end, you don't really have any assets and you just have to find more business. It's like running on a hamster wheel almost.
I totally agree with that. And I was thinking about this last night because I knew we were recording this podcast today. And I thought if I was starting from zero and I had to make $1,000, how would I make $1,000 in with the least amount of audience, right? I was a new person. Maybe I just had the people that I was friends with on Facebook. To me, the easiest way to make that $1,000 is to create a service that you could sell for $50 or $100, right? Whether it's whatever you're good at. Maybe you're really good at designing images, or maybe you're really good at fixing something tech-wise. I think you could sell that service to 10 or 20 people pretty easily just based on your network without necessarily having an audience built already. And so to me, that was the quickest way to get money online. I don't think it's the most efficient or the best long-term strategy, but I think if you're just getting started, that would be my first recommendation for people.
I think the only reason that I would ever recommend that is if you had no money to invest, like literally nothing, and you just needed to make money sooner rather than later. I think that's the only way I would recommend a services-based business in the beginning. Would you agree with that, or?
I agree, but I think for us, a lot of the people that we're working with don't have a lot of money to invest initially. They need to get that capital to then build another business. It takes a little bit more money. And so that's why, for me, that seemed to be the smartest, not the most efficient, but the smartest way to just get a quick $1,000.
Okay. So I guess we're talking about two different things here, right? We're talking about how quickly you can make money. And we're also talking about, I guess, the most straightforward way to make money.
Yeah, I think it's the easiest, but it's probably the most work, but it's the easiest, if that makes sense. Can you have both of those in the same sentence? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of easy ways to make money. Like, I could go out and mow the lawn, right?
I don't think you're going to get paid for mowing your own yard.
Well, I wouldn't really necessarily consider that. What's your definition of business, actually?
That's a hard question.
It is, right?
I guess my definition of business is something that you build that you have the ability to give or sell at the end of the day to somebody else. To me, that's a business.
I mean, let's say I'm programming for some, let's say I'm writing snippets of code for somebody. That kind of almost sounds like a job, except yes. I'm a consultant, right?
Right. I agree with that. But then I think about people we know like Grayson Bell or Kate All, who have built service-based businesses where they've hired a team now. So they're not the ones in the weeds every day actually providing the service. They have a team of people providing the service, and they're now managing a company.
Sure. Okay. All right. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. Once it goes beyond yourself, then it becomes more like a business. I've actually done a podcast and an episode on this before. Like if I were to try to make $1,000 fast, I wouldn't go the freelance route completely. I would just start putting out tutorials and try to scale in a way of bringing all these people together and doing like an online presentation and maybe turning that into a series instead of just like one-off projects. That way I'm not like catering to any one client per se.
And I think we've seen that too with people who start maybe in a service-based business, but then they take the training materials or the things that they've created and then turn it into a course or a digital product or something like that. So they've started as a service and then they've been able to leverage their audience and their expertise into creating something that's less hands-on.
I mean, in a way, that's kind of how we started our course together, right? I mean, We just started putting out some content and we did a webinar and we got some people to sign up.
Yeah.
Right. I guess, is there a reason why we didn't start out as a freelance business?
Well, I think I did a little bit because I used to do a lot of coaching, individual coaching one-on-one.
What?
But
how did I not know this about you?
I actually don't know because I think I was doing this when we knew each other. And I realized that I think for someone with my personality or even your personality, when you get involved with somebody and you start to learn more about their business, it's hard to just give them whatever you're billing them for, right? So let's just say you're doing an hour a week with a client, right, as a service-based business. I think for most people who enter that service world, they're spending way more than an hour a week because they're thinking about the client, they're looking things up, right? So maybe they're working on something and then they get an idea and they're like, oh, I should look that up for this person. And so at the end of the day, you're probably investing like 5 or 6 hours a week in this person that you're only billing for an hour. Mm-hmm. And that's when it doesn't make sense anymore, right? Because you can't scale that in any way, because even if you had a client an hour, at the end of the day, you have other things you have to do and you have to do other things to help that person. So I think that's where the whole consulting slash service business doesn't work.
So you were doing paid coaching? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. About blogging.
See, the problem is, I know your personality. I can't see you just detaching after that paid coaching session.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is where the problem lies. So it's easier to teach a course where we still get really invested in people's lives and their businesses and what's going on, but yet we're producing content on a mass scale, right? So we're producing content not for just the one person. We're producing content for 100 people, 200 people, 500 people, 1,000 people.
All right. So instead of freelancing, why not just start putting out the content like on a blog or a YouTube channel or a podcast, for example?
I absolutely think you can do that, but I think if you need to make money initially to fund whatever else you're doing, maybe you need money to host a website or...
I mean, the website's $3 a month. We know that, right?
Okay, well, listen, maybe you need a designer to help you build something.
There's free themes. We know that, right? It's not about how the website looks.
Maybe they're not in our course and they haven't been taught how to do all that by themselves. Maybe they're totally on their own and they need a little bit of money to get started. That's why I think that coaching or that consulting stuff works initially because it gives you the money.
Okay.
But then you quickly move to a mass model, which would be a course, right? Which is another way to make money.
A course or
membership.
I kind of want to steer this conversation away from like quick money. Like freelancing to me, like without like running an agency, what you talked about earlier was like an agency, is more like just getting another job in a way, right?
Yeah.
So I guess we're talking about content here. Whenever I think of business, I don't really think about making money like immediately, like within like a week or so. Usually I think in terms of at least 6 months, more like a year, right?
Which makes you different from every other single person that starts a blog or a website.
Come on. When you started your blog, you're telling me that you were going to make money like in a month or so?
No, but what's the number one question that we get asked all the time? How long till I make money? Every time we run a webinar, how long till I make money? That is one of our number one questions that we get.
Right. How long? But it's okay. And then how do we answer that question?
We usually say it depends.
Which is like the worst answer ever.
Which is the worst answer ever.
Yeah.
We typically say it takes about a year.
Right.
So I think people that are starting a business where they're going to build an audience, where they're going to eventually monetize that audience, in the back of their mind, they're thinking, how long is this going to take? How long till I make? I think there's a couple things. Like, how long do I till I make enough money to support a hobby or pay my mortgage, right? There's those folks, right? They don't need a full, like, they love their full-time job. They're just looking for something else, a side hustle. Then there's the people that don't like their job, or maybe they want more freedom or flexibility. They want to be location independent. And those people are looking for money that's on the scale of replacing an income. So I think we have those two types of people, right? People that are like, hey, if I make a couple thousand dollars a month, I'm happy. And then there's the people that are like, dude, I need to make $100,000 because I need to support my lifestyle.
So this is where I think e-commerce has its benefit, right? I feel like e-commerce is a much quicker way to generate income. More upfront costs and probably more headaches, but I don't know. I'm just curious, when you were already a successful blogger, content creator before you started your store, why did you even want to go into e-commerce at that point?
So one of the benefits of e-commerce is the anonymity of e-commerce. One of the, I'd say, drawbacks of anything with creating a website, blog, podcast, YouTube channel, I think the anonymity is probably non-existent if you want to. Well, it's not non-existent, but if you want to be successful, the easiest way to do that is to be a personality. You have to show yourself, give people something of yourself. And with e-commerce, you never have to show yourself. You never have to be the brand. The brand can be just the brand, right? Like no one who buys from Bumblebee Linens knows that you're Bumblebee Linens. Right.
I mean, that's not true anymore, but yeah. Well,
yeah. But your customers that don't follow you, right?
Sure.
The someone who does a Google search and shows, get your Google shopping ad comes up, right? They have no idea that that's Steve Chu. No
right.
clue.
Okay, so I think counter argument, like, okay. You know, tons of bloggers whose face isn't even on the blog. Like Larry Ludwig just sold his blog for like $1 million. He's not even really on the site.
Is that public knowledge? Did you just?
I'm pretty sure it's public knowledge.
Okay.
If not, I'll bleep it out.
Yeah. Sold his blog for bleepity bleep. I think that's why I said I think it's possible to do that. But I think you and I both recommend that you need one of the ways to be successful in content creation is to show part of your personality and differentiate yourself from the crowd by giving your spin, your personality to the website.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's blogging about SEO, right?
No, he's blogging about finance.
That's boring. You don't necessarily need to have
I mean, you can't argue with millions of dollars.
No, you can't. Absolutely. Like, I think it's definitely possible. We know a couple big bloggers that have sold. Who was the anonymous guy initially? 5 Cent Nickel?
Yes.
Was he anonymous? Yeah. So I think it's definitely possible to do that. But I think in today's world, having your personality come through and with the rise in popularity of video, that makes it even more difficult.
Yeah, but you know, I don't want to intimidate the people listening to this either. Like Jim Wang, for example, I don't think he does any video. Is his face even on his site?
Yes, I think it's the one picture that's everywhere.
Oh, okay. The standard glamour yeah. shot that he uses.
Yeah, the glamour shot that's yeah. 8 years old.
Ouch. Yeah, but you don't have to do it that way, but it helps, certainly.
Yeah. But I agree. So I think one of the e-commerce benefits is that that doesn't even factor in, right? You
That's
cannot
correct.
Be a part of your brand at all. I think you're right, though. The nice thing about e-commerce is that it is pretty easy to make money when you're getting started if you pick the right product. I mean, obviously, there's all these details involved with e-commerce, and you do have to have some startup money, which I think is probably a deterrent for some people if they really only have that like $3 a month, right? To
Definitely.
Put up a website. But I think if you have a little extra cash, then e-commerce is, I don't want to say it's like the most sure bet, but I think it's probably a good investment because as you talk about a lot, even if your product doesn't really work, you can always liquidate it on eBay or, you know, you won't get stuck out of money.
So the reason why I asked you that question earlier was, at least for me, I personally feel like the content blogging route is actually better in the long run than e-commerce from a lifestyle perspective, right? You went from a successful content site to e-commerce. I went the other way around. And I'm just kind of curious why you did that.
For me, I was just burnt out on blogging. When I got into e-commerce, I had been blogging 9 years. And I really felt like there wasn't much else to write about. I mean, I think for you, with my wife quit her job, that environment's always changing, right? Search algorithms are always changing. How Amazon works is always changing. All that, you know, tariffs, and there's just so many components, right, to what you write about that gets updated on a very regular basis. I'm writing about home ec. How you clean baseboards never changes. How you fold laundry never changes. So at some point, you've kind of written about everything. I think it was Harlan Landis who said this at a FinCon several years ago. At some point, you can only talk about how to open a savings account so many different ways. And I think for me, I felt like I had talked about all the things. There's only so many pasta recipes you can put on a blog. And I just needed to do something different, but still generate income.
I find that really strange because you always have stuff to talk about. I mean, endless stories and that sort of thing.
So I do have endless stories, but I'm not like a memoirist. I'm doing tips and tutorials.
I mean, for me, e-commerce was a way to just make money fast. And by fast, I mean at least a year.
Yeah.
Right. And so we replaced my wife's income and that was great. That was like the one big mental hurdle that I had. And then after that, it freed me up to take part in something that is much longer term. So like the whole content game is a lot longer term. And so I gave that about 5 years actually when I started out. It took three, but it was five. And then now that it's up, I would say running the blog and the podcast and all that stuff is so much easier than e-commerce. I mean, you can scale it much easier because it's mostly digital stuff as opposed to physical products and dealing with suppliers and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I would say that probably our view, or my view at least, is a little bit skewed. If I think about who I know in e-commerce and who I know in blogging, and I think we know, you and I know a lot of really successful bloggers, but we also know a lot of really successful small e-commerce sellers. And for me, I know many more e-commerce sellers that are over $10 million a year than I do bloggers, right? So,
but that's revenue, but, right?
Revenue, yes. Yeah. So of course, you've got the whole... It's a profit. Who knows? What are they making? $8 a month? But I think the difference in that is when you have an e-commerce business and it's making $5 million a year or $10 million a year, you're kind of getting chained to your business, right? That flexibility is a little bit less because at that point you probably have employees. I know there's some people on Amazon that are not in that case, but most people we know that are a business that big have a team. Right. So now you're in a management situation and who knows what your actual profitability is on that. Right. Like you might be making $10 million, but your profitability might be $500,000. Right. We don't know.
Like all the big bloggers that we know have a staff also. Right.
They do. But it's a lot different. Right. Like how many bloggers have you had a conversation with that are complaining about personnel? I don't hear that at all.
Really?
I hear it, but like I think about the e-commerce people that we know and there's always like staff issues, right? Like, oh, I can't find a good shipping person or I'm having trouble with the dynamics of these two people. Or typically with bloggers, these people aren't working in the same room together.
I think the reason for that is because I think there's just whenever you have personnel, there's just going to be headaches, right? Across the board. I guess the difference is that if you're running a warehouse, for example, you actually have to have the people physically there. Like we have warehouse employees, for example.
Right.
Whereas, you know, in the content world, you can have people all over the world. It doesn't really matter. So it's probably easier to hire that way.
Exactly.
On the flip side, though, there's a lot of people these days run e-commerce stores without handling any inventory at all, right? They use 3PLs or they use Amazon.
Right.
So it's actually become a lot more similar over the years.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would definitely do e-commerce again if I was going back in time. I wouldn't have not done e-commerce. I definitely am glad that I did it.
I mean, I think the way I proceeded is the way I would proceed again, right? Do e-commerce until you have all your needs met and you're not really worrying about money. And then you don't have this mentality of like, how soon can I make money? How soon can I make money? And then work on something in the content realm for the long term. I've known bloggers who have hit it big really quickly. But more often than not, it's over a year, but it tends to like hockey stick, right? Like my blog went from like just making like $100,000 a year all the way up to like over $1 million within the span of like 2 years. So it can be quick, whereas e-commerce is more like linear, I feel, in terms of what you can earn. It can go hockey stick too. Like we hockey sticked like within the first couple of years, but then it just kind of leveled off over time.
Yeah, I think that with e-commerce, initially, you'll see probably faster growth from zero, right? But once you have a successful brand, you're not going to see 75% growth in a year, right? Whereas on a blog, you could absolutely see that And we know tons of, it's happened both to both of us, and we know a lot of people that it's happened to as well, where the blog growth is exponential, where I feel like, you're right, the e-commerce growth is pretty linear.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit, and let's talk a little bit about just kind of like the different digital models. There's, in addition to selling physical products in e-commerce, there's also affiliate marketing, they're selling digital products, membership sites, advertising, sponsored content.
Courses. Did you say courses?
I did say, oh no, I didn't. I said membership sites. I didn't say courses. Okay. What is your take on, like, if we combine all those together, along with physical products, like, what's your take on each of those?
I will start by saying I wish that I would have created more digital products earlier on. I wish I would have focused on that from the beginning, as opposed to sort of dabbling in it back and forth, because I think digital products are an amazing way to generate revenue that's completely scalable, right? There's zero cost to get started, and there's no limit to what you can sell. So I think for me, like, looking back and talking to people that are just getting started, I think digital products are an amazing way to go. You know, all the other things, you know, it's hard because advertising, sponsored content, you really need a decent sized audience to make good money from either of those things, because sponsored content is based on your interactions on social media and your website page views. So if you have low social media following and not, you know, if your website's getting 5,000 page views a month, you're probably not going to get a lot of sponsored content opportunities. You have to get to a certain level before those become lucrative. And same with advertising. I think the lowest level you can get in for advertising is 20,000 page views a month. So you have to have already hit a certain threshold. And then it's all dependent on the page views you get and the money that the advertisers are paying, right? So you don't have any control over that. You and I both know a lot of digital product sellers who, when they need to make a little more money in the month, they send an email out to their list, right? And there's 10 grand, there's 20 grand, where you can't do that with advertising or sponsored posts.
Right.
You're kind of at the mercy of a brand. That being said, to me, advertising is just a great passive income stream, because you don't have to, you're still creating the same content, you're still doing the same things, and you're just getting a paycheck at the end of the month. So I do think that it's a good opportunity for people, but I also think it's very dependent on your traffic, and you're not going to even be able to start using that until you've hit a certain level.
What would you say the cons are for a digital product?
I mean, if you don't have an audience, you don't have anyone to sell to.
Well, let's say you have that audience. I have like mixed feelings, like, and I'm just thinking digital versus physical. In digital land, I feel like I constantly have to be updating my digital materials to keep them up to date. Whereas physical, like, once it's out there, I don't have to touch it. I just keep ordering more. I know you sell different digital products. Do you update yours constantly, or?
I don't, but my digital products would be, I would say, evergreen. So one of the digital products that I sell is a book on picky eaters, an ebook. And that really hasn't, I mean, I wrote that book over 10 years ago. I have updated it a few times just to add more content to it. But at the same time, the core principles of picky eaters will never change. So the only reason why I would be updating it is just to provide more value. There's no need to update it because anything has changed to make the book outdated. And I think if you can think of digital products that are more evergreen in nature, as opposed to maybe a training material on something that has a lot of updates, like, you know, an SEO training manual, right? Like, that's probably a terrible digital product, because you're going to create it and you're going to have to constantly, every time Google has an update, you're going to have to update it.
Right.
And so you sort of lose that evergreen and, you know, set it and forget it type monetization strategy for that. But I think if you're creating evergreen content, I think there's a huge difference there.
That's funny. I guess I don't really buy evergreen content digital products unless you count like ebooks and I guess it's all in the same thing. Like, the digital products that I tend to buy are the ones that aren't evergreen, actually, ironically.
I mean, there's a good angle to that too, because let's just say you sell a Facebook ads digital product, right? A manual for Facebook ads. I mean, every time you update it, you can upsell that your current customers, right? So you do have that angle where you can continue to sell to the same people because it's always changing. But then at some point, when are they irritated that, like, hey, how come I'm not getting like lifetime update or, you know, yearly, like, what's included? And I know there's some people who do courses on various, like our friend Rachel Miller, you know, I know she includes like once you buy the course, you get the updates for a certain period of time because people were, I don't know if this is how it was before, but, you know, people were irritated like, hey, everything's changed. I have old data that doesn't work anymore. So she's allowed people to have access to the updates.
Yeah, I mean, since you just brought up courses, I mean, we can talk a little bit about that since I run two and I run with one with you. Courses are another challenge in itself. I think it's just great and it's a lot of fun. That's the primary benefit that I get out of it. But you have to keep the students engaged. You have to make sure that they're making forward progress. It's a lot more than just your run-of-the-mill digital product, right?
Yes, and I think there's two types of courses. There's the courses that would be lower priced. So maybe at that $99 price point or the $149 price point, where basically people purchase that course. It's a series of videos and PDFs that walk them through things. And then there's no customer support. There's no Q&A. You can't really ask any questions. You're just buying. It's almost like reading through a textbook, right? And that doesn't mean that they're not valuable. I think they can be. And then there's the type of course that, like, we run Marie Forleo with B-School, where it's much more involved, where we are doing, like, weekly Q&A. We have, you know, 24/7 basic support for people. And so there, I think there's a lot more commitment in that, but it's also, I think, more lucrative in the long run.
Yeah. You know what's funny is what distinguishes a course without the interaction versus, like, a book? Is it just the fact that it's video, really?
Honestly, there are courses that aren't even video, or they're like PowerPoint, right? There's not like an actual person talking to you. It's PowerPoint slides going through. I bought a course like that several years ago, and I was slightly disappointed because it was just a PowerPoint. I was like, I could have read all this. I didn't need to sit through a PowerPoint. But I don't think there is much of a difference. But I don't know. I feel like there's more perceived value with the course. So if you call it a course, you can probably charge more. Most people probably wouldn't pay $147 for a book.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But you would $147 for a course. You're like, that's a great deal. $147. I'll buy that.
Yeah. Unless you open it up and it's just a bunch of PowerPoints. And then at that point, there's video component to that course?
No, there was none. Huh. There's none.
To me, like, the courses are like the premium digital products that you can sell, right? Yeah. So, I mean, personally, that's why I would never launch a course without some in-person component. I know with my course, the more successful the students are, it always leads to selling more. And so, like, I unfortunately do not run a class and teach stuff that's evergreen. It, like, constantly needs to be updated, which is why I need to keep up with the industry and that sort of thing. But I give lifetime access, lifetime updates, whereas other people, I think, sell new versions of their class. Because, you know, the more successful people I have, the more business kind of comes in. And it just works.
Well, and I think that's a huge component of having a course, too, is having those success stories. Because that's the proof that someone who's thinking about buying your course needs to decide to buy your course as opposed to somebody else's. And if you look at any course page that has, like, a legitimate product, it's filled with success stories from people. I can't think of a sales page that I've seen in the past year that hasn't had at least three success stories on the front page.
You know, it's interesting. I was just thinking about this just now, and we never actually even had this conversation, I don't think. We were developing our course together. Why did we choose the lump sum model versus, like, a monthly membership model? Because we haven't touched on membership sites just yet.
I think it's because that's what you wanted to do.
Well, no, but clearly I don't make the decisions.
I think I defaulted to you because of your success with Profitable Online Store. And to me, well, I think we also have a core philosophy where we don't like to nickel and dime people.
But a membership site isn't really nickel and diming, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's not.
Like, you know ahead of time what you're getting into. It's a monthly fee. Nickel and diming is like, oh, you join, then there's like this upsell for something else. And
Yes. To get this training, you have to get another $39, whatever. Yeah, that's true. I don't know. It just felt better, I guess. That's a terrible answer. I don't like to do anything on feelings, but...
I didn't even know you had them.
Okay, well, so one of the reasons... Through.
Since we've never talked about this, it might be interesting.
Yeah, this is our... Maybe we should change our business model. What's going on here?
Right. Okay, so would you personally rather just pay lump sum a much higher dollar amount versus a monthly fee to stay in a course, for example?
I would always pay the lump sum.
So $2,000 versus $50 a month.
Or, well, just to be clear, we don't charge that.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, okay. Yes. Sorry. $1,000 versus $50 a month.
Yes, I would do the $1,000, and here's why.
Okay.
So I pay for a membership to a Pinterest, like high-level Pinterest training, because it's very important to my business. I think we talked about like 44% of my traffic comes from Pinterest. So I feel like it's worth the investment. I joined the first time it opened. So I think I'm in at like the founder rate of $47 a month or $57 a month. I think that's a lot per month. I mean, I don't think it's a lot for the content, but like to me, that's a decent size expense for a website. But and I've been in it because I got an email saying it was like my year anniversary in the membership like 2 months ago. And I thought, okay, well, I've spent, what, $700, $600? I don't know the math. But now if I want to continue to – and the content's good. But if I want to continue to get it, I have to keep paying. So in my mind, I'm thinking if I'm in this group for like 4 years, I'm paying like $2,000, right? If I can, because I keep paying every month, and that's a lot of money.
What's stopping you from just joining for a month, downloading all the materials, and then maybe coming back 6 months later and doing the same thing again?
Because a lot of the material is in the Facebook, is in a Facebook group, where it's a lot of the value in that group is the fact that, and I think this is true with like Molly Pittman, she has a paid Facebook ads group as well. A lot of the value is in the conversations in the Facebook group. So I know if I have a problem with Pinterest, I know we were having an issue last week with one of our students with the Verified Merchant Program, and I was able to go in the group that I'm in and do a ton of research without and getting like all this information that would have been a lot harder to find if I was just Googling and didn't know where I was even getting that information from.
I know for me personally, it's hard to say. Like if I didn't... I have different perspectives from the perspective of a buyer versus a seller. Like for me, I tend not to like the membership model as much, mainly because there's going to be ebbs and flows in the content that you're putting out there, right? If you're doing a straight month to month, I feel like you constantly are going to be on this treadmill of putting out additional content to appease the people to convince them to stay for another month. Like the way I structure my classes, sometimes like in a month, I'll put out a whole bunch of content. But then there's other months where I'm not innovating as much for my business and there might be less content for a given month. So that's, for me mentally, why I don't like the membership model as much. From a buyer perspective, I just go in based on what I think I can pay the least for to get the most information out of. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so going from the business side on the membership, I think you end up being very focused on reducing your churn rate.
Right.
As opposed to being focused on what's best for the community, what's best for what's going on in that industry. And because a lot of times what the community wants is might not be what's best for them, right? They might, because a lot of times the community gets on like these weird tangents, right? And you're like, whoa, 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 back it up, get back to this fundamental stuff. And so you can still produce that content without worrying that, oh my gosh, if I put out a video on this, which I actually think is really important and my community is going to know that in 6 months, you're worried like, well, I can't put that out because I've got, you know, these people that already are seem on the fence and now I'm going to lose that revenue and that, you know, that might equal $1,000 a month that you're going to lose. So now you're thinking twice about what you're doing and you're making decisions not based on your expertise, which is why you started it in the first place. You're making decisions based on the crowd, which I think is really bad.
I mean, I've been told that the membership model will make you a lot more money and it's predictable money, right? Every month you have people paying and coming in and that sort of thing. Whereas the lump sum model, you know, you're going to get much more wild fluctuations in terms of what you make. So my personal reasons for doing the lump sum model was, I remember having this conversation with my friend Corbett Barr. He runs Fizzle.co and he does a membership model. But I remember one day we were walking and he told me that the average person stays for about 6 months. And he was just telling, I don't know how much he charges anymore, but 6 months, whatever that is, multiplied by whatever he charges. And I was thinking to myself, I would much rather just have that money up front, right? And then there's no stress for the person that's in the class either about rushing through to either download everything mm-hmm. or whatnot. So
I will say though, because we do know several people that run the monthly membership programs. And sometimes when I like, you know, we can see how many people are in their group, right? And so you start doing the math and you're thinking, oh, that's a lot of money every month, right? Yeah. I mean, there's definitely times when I think, well, that person's pulling in 25 grand a month from their membership. That doesn't count all the other ways they're making money, yep. right? Yep. Just like, you're like, you got this many people paying X amount of dollars and you start thinking about that. And there's definitely times where I'm thinking, are we doing this the right way? But I feel like we are doing it the right way for our personalities and as well as what I think. I agree with you. I don't want to be stressed about someone leaving.
Yeah. You know, I, because one of our good friends is Andrew Udarian. He runs this forum where he charges monthly. Yes. And I'm thinking to myself, man, like Andrew doesn't have to do anything. And then this money just comes in every month, right? He has an even better model where he doesn't actually have to produce any content,
yeah.
right? It's the users that are producing the content. So ingenious, Udarian, if you're ever listening to this.
That's right.
So I actually kind of flip-flop. Like sometimes it's kind of nice, right? If you have like a couple thousand students or whatever paying a lower dollar amount every month and you know that's going to come in. So yeah. I'm kind of torn on this one, but like I would much rather have the lump sum, whatever the lifetime value is of that customer. But on the flip side, people are a lot more hesitant to sign up when they see a larger upfront
yeah.
dollar amount.
And the other, I'm like talking myself out of a lump sum. The other benefit of the monthly membership program is that if your price point is not high, and we use examples in our course of this, like there's the guy that has the Orchid support group, right? It's like $5 a month, but he's got thousands of people in the group paying $5 a month, right? So you're thinking this dude is doing nothing except for allowing this Facebook group to exist and moderating it, which is not nothing, but it's pretty easy. And he's pulling in 20 grand a month about flowers, right?
Right.
And you're thinking, okay, he's probably spending 30 hours a week like in his garden, right? And just paying for his life off of his Orchid membership.
Yeah. So you're actually convincing me. I know.
My point with that was
yeah.
one of the things that I think can happen too, which is another pro, we're going to have to like revamp everything. Well, okay, there's a pro and a con. The pro is if it's a cheap thing, if it's $19 a month, I mean, I know this is not you, but I can tell you that other than you, every blogger that I know has memberships to tools or services or programs that are under, let's say $30 a month that they forget they have until they have to do their taxes. And then they're like, crap, I just spent $370 this year on a service that I've never used, a group I've never gone in. But because it's that low price point, you get people that sign up because they're excited. Maybe you run a webinar and then they never think about it again. Right. And that's the thing about the membership is that money keeps coming in, even though these people are like not. It's like a gym membership. Right.
Yeah.
They sign up because it's the first of the year and then they never come to the gym or they go 2 days and they're done. So I think that's the pro of the membership, because you have a lot of people who just forget about the membership altogether and they still pay it because it's auto charge.
I mean, one thing I did consider doing, and I'm just literally just thinking about this out loud right now, is offering a monthly membership and a lump sum option.
Okay.
Right? Where if
the risk is they download everything though, right?
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, yeah, that's the problem. Like in my class, actually, there's like 300 something videos, you know? I mean, literally, they could just download everything in the first month and then leave.
Well, even in our blog course, which I would say is a pretty new product, right? It's less than a year old. We have about 100 training videos in that course. So
have we really hit 100? That's crazy.
We're close. We're in the 90s.
Wow. Okay.
Pat ourselves on the back.
I know, seriously.
So I think that for that, you know, someone could come in there, download all the videos and pay $99, right? Or whatever the monthly fee is.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, thanks a lot, you know? So I don't know how you keep that component from happening. On the flip side, the con of that monthly membership is that I think about when Andrew, you know, he had the same price for the forums for 5, 10, however many years, a long time. And then he raised it, justifiably so. But a lot of times if you get to that point where you have to raise the price because it makes sense for the business, you get a lot of pushback from the people in the group. And then like what happens? How many do you lose versus how many you convert on the higher price point? Do you have to grandfather people in? And I think that's where the big con of a membership site is because for us, people know they pay that fee. It's nothing's changing for them. They're done. They've paid it and they're getting everything forever.
Yeah, I feel like if you're going to do the membership route, there has to be like the community aspect of it and the user-generated content has to be a huge portion of that, I think, or the ongoing part, right?
Yeah, because that's what keeps people from coming in and just downloading all the material.
And since we're talking about out loud about our business here, I wonder if it would make sense to just do a monthly just for like the weekly office hours or something like that, just to kind of get a dabble of what the real thing is. That way you don't have to worry about people ripping off the content and they get the benefit of the Q&A. I don't know.
So my only thought about that, since we're discussing our own business model.
I know. Sorry, guys.
This is how this is an interesting little exercise because you can see how two business partners work things out. I like the idea, but I also think there's a danger for the people who've paid for the membership, for the lifetime.
Yeah.
That the people that come into the office hours have a lack of knowledge and understanding because they don't have a lot of the other lessons. And so they're going to junk up the questions with, I don't want to say stupid questions, but they're going to be stupid questions for our people who have been through these modules that are walking them through very specific setting up.
That's true.
Important plugins.
That's true.
You know what I mean? So then it's kind of like when we run a webinar, we always get people that are asking really amazing questions and are very, they're not necessarily educated on the topic, but they're educated on how to ask the questions versus the people that come in there. And I don't know what their deal is, but they're just kind of being a pain, right? And asking very silly, I don't want to say ignorant questions, but they're asking questions that we covered, right?
Yeah.
That we covered in the webinar.
Yeah.
So that's where I feel like then you sort of dilute it for the...
That's true. That's true. Unless you do a completely separate session for those people.
Or you just do they get a certain amount of time and then you kick them out and then you get the.
Oh, yeah. Or they don't
actually.
They don't get access to the recordings.
No. They don't get access to recordings. Oh, okay. We could do this. Now I got ideas. It's coming. We're going to. Okay. So just for you guys who don't know this, we do a weekly office hours on Thursday, typically at 2:00. We do typically a 20 to 30 minute lesson, which then gets archived into the course. And then for the remaining. Well, when I'm on, it's like 45 minutes. When it's Steve,
it's
like 20.
Yeah, right, exactly.
We answer any question anybody has in our course about any topic. And typically the first set of questions is on the presentation. But then after that, it ends up being things that people have struggled with that week based on the videos they've watched. What we could do is provide a Q&A that cuts off, right? So the people only get a certain amount of Q&A. And then we use our Friday check-in for the Q&A for everybody in the course.
Hmm. Interesting.
That way it's not because we kind of use our Friday. So we also do a check-in on Friday on Facebook where we let people ask us. We tell what we've done that week and then we let people ask us anything. But that could become more purposeful in the Q&A section. And the Thursday could be for anybody.
Interesting. We'll have to talk about this further. Okay. So since we went off on multiple tangents, let's kind of wrap up what we talked about here. So we talked about freelancing, we talked about content creation, we talked about e-commerce, and then we, within the content, we talked about membership sites, courses, digital products, and that sort of thing. All right. So here are my conclusions to sum everything up. And you're going to have a different answer, I know. I think freelancing, like only if you really need the money, because in my eyes, that's like doing another job. And I personally don't like the agency model. This is where you hire a bunch of consultants to essentially do your freelance work for you, because then it's just about managing people. And then I think the margins are going to be pretty thin, right? Because you have to charge a lot more and you have to pay your people, right? And they have to be pretty skilled at that. So for me, I would say if you need money in the short term, and by short term, I mean a year, I think e-commerce is probably the best way to go, assuming you have more money to invest. And if you have a much longer time frame for money, then the content route, in my opinion, is the superior way to go. And digital products, courses, and maybe a membership site. Who knows? Yeah.
Definitely the membership site. Yeah. That's what I've learned from this podcast. I think my takeaway, I actually agree with you for the most part. I do think e-commerce is a little bit of a sure thing for most people if they follow the right steps. However, I do also think that if you are creating content, having that plan to have a membership site or have a course or have something digital is probably the best way to make consistent money over time. And it's also the most scalable because as your audience grows with all three of those models, first of all, you can start all three of those models when you have 1,000 page views a month.
Right.
You know, we hear people that if they have a really high dollar product, right? We have someone in our course that sells, they teach on how to create a franchise, right? That's a high dollar product. They don't need 100,000 people a month reading their blog. They need 1,000 people a month that are interested in franchising. So I think to sum it up, those models, you can start with very little traffic and grow them. And as your traffic grows, those all become more profitable for you and ultimately infinitely scalable.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like we mostly agree. I'm looking at my businesses right now, and Bumblebee Linens is sellable. Like, that's an asset. Whereas the mywifequitherjob.com, because it's a lot more of me, it's less sellable. I guess that's another thing to consider too.
I don't know. I think it's sellable.
It's sellable your if I just remove
your
myself.
Your course isn't sellable.
Yeah, the course is definitely not sellable. The blog probably is because it gets traffic on its own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got a high domain authority. I think you could sell the blog pretty easily.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
Based on the people we know that have sold.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, hey, that was actually a good session for both the audience and ourselves, I would think. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.